Hi there, I'm James Hamar, and welcome to How We Work, a podcast from WorkHuman. This episode was recorded live at WorkHuman Live, our three-day annual event where we learn from the best and brightest leaders who are helping shape the future of work. Today, our very own Dr. Misha Ann Martin is talking with Fajani Cadet, an HR and inclusion leader whose insights challenged us to think differently about belonging and identity. Let's dive in.
All right, Fajani, I'm so excited to be talking to you. Welcome to our How We Work podcast. We're gonna have a great conversation today. I just know it.
I'm excited.
Okay, so every conversation starts out the same way because we are WorkHuman and we do care about humans, so.
Before we jump in, I wanna share where I'm coming from. I'm someone who's still learning about these topics, and talking with people like Fajani helps me see work in a different light. As someone who's not an HR pro myself, I'm curious, how do these experiences shape the way we build workplaces?
If you would, please introduce us to Fajani the human being.
Okay, so Fajani the human being, I would say, is a mother. I am a sister, a daughter. Professionally, I've worn many hats. So I am an HR and inclusion leader. I am a speaker, an author, but I would say that at the root of it all, I am someone who's deeply committed to helping people and systems evolve. Okay. So I would say whether that's coaching a first-gen college student, helping organizations, guiding them through inclusive transformation, or as a working mom, planning mommy and son play dates on the weekends, I try to lead intentionally, boldly, and encourage and inspire others to lead with that same level of intention, care, and I'd say even courage.
Yeah. So you mentioned first gen, and you have a special attachment to that. So can you explain to us, for the benefit of our listeners, because I know what first gen is,
yes.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah.
And maybe talk a little bit about your book in first place as well.
Yes, so I've always identified as first gen because my parents weren't born here, right? And I think what's important is what I learned over time is that first gen identity is also defined by people who it's the first time that they're going to college, first person in their family to go to college, or the first person in their family to hold a professional white collar, right, or corporate level role. And so I think what makes the first-gen experience unique and distinctive is I like to say it feels like you're on this never-ending hamster wheel of learning and unlearning simultaneously, right? I think it's marked by, experiencing survivor's remorse, imposter syndrome, feeling like you're navigating spaces without role models or playbooks, so to speak. And that comes with a lot of pressure. And what I recognized as soon as I started my career was that there were a lot of other people who were navigating the same challenges, who didn't look like me, whose parents were born in this country, who did not grow up how I grew up.
As someone who didn't personally navigate that experience, I'm realizing how many unspoken rules exist in the workplace. It's made me wonder how often we assume people just know things, and what happens when they don't.
And that's when I started to really understand the deep intersectionality of the experience. And so my book, in first place, I wrote the book because as I built my career in the diversity, inclusion, and belonging space, I recognized that, yes, I am a Black woman. Yes, I am someone who is the first in my family to navigate these spaces. Yes, I'm Black. Yes, I'm a woman. And this huge part of my identity, right, that impacted the way that I navigated the workplace felt seemingly missing from conversations about supporting and uplifting employees.
Yeah.
And that's really what the book was about, not necessarily how can first-gen professionals be equipped with the skills necessary to thrive, because there's a lot of books on the market about that, but what can organizations do through the lens of inclusion to build more inclusive programs and initiatives to help first-gen professionals feel seen. And I think the lesson in intersectionality in that is, again, I identify as Black, I identify as a woman, but that part felt like it was missing. And I think when leaders and organizations dismiss or don't really lean in, acknowledge the intersection of identity, they miss opportunities to really support, build, and retain their talent.
I love the way Fajani talks about skills that come from life, not just from job titles. Resilience, resourcefulness, building relationships, those are powerful.
You give some real practical advice in the book for how we can be inclusive where the first gen population is concerned. Can you share some of those tips here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we talk about navigating uncharted territory without a playbook or role models, there are so many moments that you trip over or bump into really early in your career without having those sort of resources. And so one of the things that I recommend in the book specifically is really intentional, what I call culture onboarding, right? And so rather than assuming that someone who graduated from a university knows what a coffee chat is, for example.
I read that.
Right? Or
such a good example.
I give the example. It's funny because I remember the first time I was invited to a coffee chat. This was pre-motherhood. I didn't drink coffee very much then. And I was like, I don't drink coffee, so what do I do? Can I drink tea? Is it allowed? How does this work? And so there's certain language that we use, acronyms, how you should dress, what you should say or not say in meetings, those kind of things that are typically passed down from role models, first-gen professionals don't have access to. And so being very, very intentional and specific and not assuming that anyone knows anything when you're building your onboarding experience, that new hire experience, I think is critically important. Another example that I give in the book is around guidance with building advocacy, self-advocacy specifically. I think when you are from a historically underrepresented or marginalized community, we know that disproportionately imposter syndrome can impact us. And so I remember the first time I had to do a self-review for my performance review and thinking, okay, so what do I say? What am I allowed to say? How does this connect to the bigger picture, right? Performance, outcomes, bonuses, promotions in the future. And so when you have been sort of taught either in your home or culturally that speaking boldly about the things that you've contributed, about your strengths, isn't necessarily okay or accepted, that becomes a challenge and can hold you back, right? And so again, rather than assuming that all of these things are sort of baseline, in addition to teaching folks about the process for performance reviews, what is the value? How can you show up and advocate for yourself in your self-review? What should that look like to really support building equity in the employee experience down the line?
One of the things I love that you talk about was explaining benefits, right? Because there is a difference in, you know, knowing some of these things that people take for granted that you understand, like 401k, stocks, options, right? And the most contemporary models of well-being nowadays, including the Gallup model, include financial well-being, right? But you don't necessarily come in understanding, okay, so I'm getting stock options, like what does this look like? 401k, Roth, IRA, what is all of this stuff? And so, you know, I think we could do a better job equipping people with the knowledge so that they could make decisions. I also think that we can be more inclusive in the way that we think about teaching financial health and literacy.
This part really got me thinking. Coffee chats, performance reviews, even understanding benefits. These are things many of us take for granted, but for someone new to corporate life, they can feel like hidden rules. What if inclusion was about making those rules visible? That feels like something any HR team could start doing tomorrow.
Absolutely. It's part of that sort of onboarding experience, right? Mm-hmm. I remember my first job ever, one of the initiatives that I led was building a benefits overview and adding that as part of the onboarding experience. Because to your point, I think for a lot of first-gen professionals, we watched our parents make lemonade out of lemons our whole lives, right? And so we're not thinking about for the tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. We're not thinking about the future. We're thinking about how do we get by today, support ourselves, support our extended families, our loved ones. And to your point, there's a gap in knowledge and awareness of how we can leverage our benefits, not only to support ourselves, but to support our families, mm-hmm. to support building legacies for the future. And so it's incredibly important. I think what I've loved is that over the last decade, we've seen more and more organizations invest in employee wellness and well-being yes. programs, right? The mental health of our employees is so important. And I'd love to see the same kind of intention, mm-hmm. the same kind of strategy employed from a benefits perspective, because there is that tie to financial well-being, empowerment even. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about that. And we're seeing that even though people are working in the same jobs at the same companies and maybe even getting paid the same amount of money, that when we talk about wealth,
absolutely,
right, it's not the same experience.
It's not the same. It's not the same. So for our listeners and our audience here, I just want to let people know, Fajani is from Haiti and I am from Jamaica, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I struggled with coming to this country was the false homogeneity of what it means to be Black, right? Like, because I was like, well, I'm Black, but I'm not African American. And I struggled with that a bit. And that is one of the reasons I'm so excited about the Trevor Noah session, because
on,
he was the first person I ever heard talk about that. And he talked about that in comedy. I actually sat my boyfriend down at the time and made him listen to it so that he could understand. So, you know, I love that you talked about intersectionality.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, like I said, I think the Black experience is something that we have learned a lot about, right, in this country. And I think in the last 6 years, right, there's been even more of a spotlight in education. But to your point, the Black experience is not monolithic. And the immigrant experience, the first generation
right.
experience, there's so much complexity there. And for organizational leaders who are really committed to building high performing cultures that retain all employees, mm-hmm. that intersectional lens is incredibly important, because otherwise you miss parts of people's identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
It sort of
That's
feels
right.
like you're erasing it,
yeah.
right? And folks want to feel affirmed. When they're showing up in the workplace. And so it's critically important, absolutely.
So I want to start talking about hot topics.
Okay.
And I'm going to start tepid, and then I'm going to get hot.
I love
okay,
it.
Okay, you ready?
I'm
okay.
ready.
So let's start tepid first.
Okay.
Everybody's talking skills right now. And I think it is a fantastic discussion and direction. It has implications for inclusion, because we see companies like Microsoft saying, okay, maybe you don't need a whole degree, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You need the skill. And we're going to open up opportunities for people who don't have equal access to a degree.
Yep.
Now, what I'm obsessed with, and this is a bit of a hot take, but I'm obsessed with this idea of skills that we develop from our life experiences that help us at work
mm-hmm.
that we don't talk about enough. So those things that we may even view about our lives with shame,
yes.
right? We don't talk about in the interview, and really those things that we've been through give us skills that are very, very applicable,
mm-hmm.
right, to roles in the workplace.
Yeah.
So with that framing, what do you think about that idea?
Yeah.
And in your opinion, what are the unique skills that you think first generation professionals bring mm-hmm. to the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, and I'm obsessed with that take. Someone asked me recently, what is something that you're excited about that you're starting to see? And I mentioned like a focus on skills-based hiring being one of those things. I just said this recently, one of the words, terminology that I have grown to become less and less a fan of
mm-hmm.
is like qualifications.
Okay.
And that's because typically the connotation is that it's this thing that you've done before.
Mm-hmm.
And this assumption that you had to have done this exact thing in this kind of role in this kind of company to prove, to provide evidence that you can be successful in a role.
Yeah.
And I think that that's untrue, right? To your point, experiences, lived experiences are both the personal and the professional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think particularly what we've learned over the last couple of years is that change is inevitable and it's happening more quickly than ever before. And so what we actually should be looking for is growth mindset, folks who've been through things that have looked different that maybe don't seem to connect with a clear through line, but shows evidence that this is a person who has had to adapt, who's had to pivot, who has had to make a connection, use this thing that they did on this side and connect it to something else that they're going to do and do it well, right? I think a lot of times in the workplace, we praise, we acknowledge and recognize folks who have been consistent and consistently done the same things and maybe have done it well, but the missed opportunity is what about the folks who maybe haven't done the thing but then did it and did it well? Or failed and then found a way to pivot and is now leading, right? Those are the kinds of things that are going to be critically important, particularly for, I think, the future of work based on what the last couple of years have told us. And when we take that back to the first generation experience, right, I talk about this in first place, resilience, right? Resourcefulness, relationship building, all of those things that we had to do. We had to figure it out. We had to stretch a dollar, right? We had to...
Oh, we know how to stretch a dollar.
We know how to stretch a dollar. And we know in today's environment, in this today's economy, budget cuts are happening. You have to do less with more. Smaller, leaner teams. How do we make things happen? Can you push through adversity, right? Mm-hmm. We know the first-gen experience, adversity is common for folks. And then build relationships with people who you have no foundation. There is no social capital. Right? There isn't any relational sort of currency. How have you entered rooms and built meaningful relationships and made connections? Because again, we know that while diversity is a bad word these days, research and data tells us that we are going to see more and more diverse representation, not only in our workplaces, but in this country. And so we need folks who have developed those skills through life experience or work experience to help lead us through that transition.
Okay, so you started talking about DEI. We're gonna go there. So we're getting medium to hot.
Okay.
So in the book, you started out by explaining each of the terms diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you talk about why each of those things is important. Now, we know that SHRM, the Society of Human Resources Management, dropped the E.
Yeah.
And other people are talking about changing the term or dropping it altogether.
Yeah.
What is your take on that?
So first, I'd like to say that language is incredibly powerful, right? It creates understanding. I think it's what connects people. And so I acknowledge and understand that it makes sense for us to have such strong and emotional reactions to certain words, right? And just like biases, whatever associations we have with words grow, they build strength over time and can sometimes eventually end up, you know, resentment or anger,
right?
And so my take on it is the words diversity, equity, and inclusion exist in the English dictionary. Right? Diversity relates to differences. Inclusion, it relates to fostering cultures and spaces, environments where folks feel seen, heard, and valued. And equity is about the distribution of resources and opportunities in a way that meets people where they are specifically, right? At a baseline, those definitions aren't changing. However, the way that those words are interpreted together, or even as an acronym, I will say has and will continue to evolve. I think what's really important now, what's most important, is the relationship between the words, right? And so when you introduce differences and diversity, you also introduce tension.
Yes.
Right? And that tension only grows when folks' lived experiences, the nuances or barriers that they experience are not acknowledged or are minimized. And no one feels supported when their lived experience is not acknowledged. And so I think that there is a meaningful path forward, even as language evolves, so long as we focus on the intersections of the terminology and the outcomes that they're intended to drive. Right? If we remember, we talk about SHRM sort of removing the E, equity is about redistributing resources, and they've talked about hyper-focus on inclusion. Well, inclusion is feeling seen. If you don't see that I started at a disadvantage or I don't have access in the same way that others have access, then I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. And so again, it's the relationship between the words. We can call this work the culture club, the fun club. It really doesn't matter to me, so long as we understand what the terms mean.
Yeah.
And again, the relationship between them and what they're intended to drive.
There's a lot of debate about the words diversity, equity, and inclusion. But here's a question I keep coming back to. Does changing the acronym change the outcome? But what I'm hearing from Fajani is that the meaning behind the words matters more than the acronym itself.
I think something that surprises people about me and my work, if they're familiar with it, is the fact that I have never had diversity in my title.
Right.
And that was kind of on purpose, because when I started my career, diversity, even though it was a personal passion of mine, it was very programmatic. And I was like, I don't want to plan stuff.
Yep.
I'm an analytics person. What I want to do is use analytics to show where inequities exist.
Right.
And also to hold ourselves accountable to say to hold us accountable to what we say we're trying to do,
right,
where DEI is concerned. And I've done that my whole career without a without a diversity or DEI title. And so I definitely think that there are some things that we could be doing better. And
agreed.
I like the idea to reflect and think about what we want to be doing in the future rather than just staying stuck on what is the current. So in that vein, what do you think organizations should be doing in this moment where DEI is concerned in general, but also particularly for first generation professionals? And I know that you've said some of those already, but more in the context of what's happening today.
Yeah, I think the first thing is acknowledgement, right? Mm-hmm. Acknowledge that something is happening, that we are living in this, in the midst of disruption and change, right? Mm-hmm. I think I wouldn't advise that any organizational leaders sort of brush past this moment. Right? Don't say nothing, because that perpetuates invisibility, not just for first-gen professionals, but for anyone from a historically underrepresented or marginalized community. And that invisibility then becomes disengagement. And we don't want that, right? Because we know engagement is what drives innovation. Yeah. And so definitely acknowledge, right, that things are different, that some things may or may not change, and communicate about how you're thinking through this moment. Bring folks along, be very transparent in that. I think the other thing that organizational leaders need to do right now is reflect on how diversity, equity, and inclusion as principles align to their core values, right?
Like
this is a moment to really look at your values, your organizational values, and say, where is there alignment here? Mm-hmm. And if there is alignment, this is the moment to reassure all employees, regardless of their backgrounds or how they identify, that these principles have been ingrained in our core values. This is the expectation. This is who we've defined ourselves as an organization. And this is the expectation for how people show up, right? This is a moment to truly be a values-based organization, right? Activate and affirm those values. This is the moment. And then we solve for that, right? This isn't something separate. It isn't programmatic. This is just who we say we are and how we show up, right? And hold people accountable to that. I think the last thing that I would add here is, because we're in such a moment of disruption, people could be feeling a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And two, Dr. Khan cites two of the main drivers of engagement being psychological availability.
Citation.
And psychological safety, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think investing, continuing to invest in employee wellness and safety programs, right, to protect folks' psychological availability so that they have the capacity to show up at work and be their best selves and drive innovation and lead in the way that you want them to lead. And also make sure that you have tightened up or recommunicated your channels, right, the process for reporting any re-traumatizing or discriminatory behavior to protect the psychological safety as well, right?
Yes, I love that. So I love that you talked about acknowledgement too. The last diversity panel we did at Work Human Live was moderated by me. Renee Myers was part of that panel too. And it was right after the Buffalo shooting. And I was not okay. And I also, at that same Work Human Live, had a session on psychological safety. And one of the things I said is the worst thing you can do for employees who are dealing with these things that are happening is to pretend that they don't. They're not happening.
Absolutely.
Because you have to come to work and pretend to be okay. And meanwhile, you feel like the world is falling. I feel like there is a parallel right now for immigrants that I'm seeing that I don't think enough people are talking mm-hmm. about. You know, people who have a green card and to some extent, even naturalized citizens like myself, we're afraid. Like yeah. I started to hide my Jamaican passport when I come back into the country and, you know, I travel a lot for work. I know coworkers who are married to people with green cards that are now afraid to travel. And it's not something that we are talking about. So it means a lot to me that you said acknowledgement.
Absolutely. I was working at an organization leading a manager session on the heels of the Buffalo shooting as well. And a manager raised their hand virtually, of course, at the time and asked, "What can I do?" And I said, people are not looking for you to have the answers.
That's right.
But they are looking to feel seen. And so in this moment, just a simple message to your team saying, hey, I acknowledge that something happened this weekend and that you all may be feeling or experiencing a wide range of emotions. I want to let you know that I know that. And please take the time and space that you need to deal with that, right? I'm here if you want to talk, but you don't have to talk to me. Oh, and here's a reminder of the employee wellness safety programs that we have access to support you through it, right? Yeah. It's that, again, perpetuating invisibility means disengagement, right? It affects our ability to moderate panels in a way that maybe we would have, right? And to your point, a lot of folks are dealing with a lot of things right now. Folks who are immigrants, right, mm-hmm. are going to work and showing up with a level of anxiety, uncertainty that may be impacting the way that they show up. And a strong manager, the best leader, sees that, they know that, and they give space for their team to either engage or create a moment of protection, right? Like give space for them to protect themselves when, if need be.
So before I wrap, I want to give you the chance to say anything to us that I haven't even thought to ask you that you want to make sure that we hear and know in this moment.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I always say is that context matters so important, right? It's so much. It's so important, generally speaking, but particularly in this moment in time. And I always like to reference Dr. Steve Robbins, who's an author and like renowned D&I thought leader, but he has a book called What If? And that I've used it with in different leadership development programs in the past. And one of the things that Dr. Robbins talks about is that we leverage our own bag of stuff in order to make sense of other people's stuff.
Interesting.
And he highlights that that is what makes being truly empathetic so hard, is that you need to know what's in that other person's bag. And so I always, and what I would offer in terms of advice or something like a moment of reflection right now, is to always lead with curiosity so that you can become an empathetic leader, colleague, et cetera, because everyone has something else in their bag. I always say that I do this work not because I'm in the business of changing hearts and minds, because we can't do that. What I am in the business of is filling people's bags with more stuff. It's the awareness piece, right? It's creating space and opportunity. When we lead with curiosity, we disarm defensiveness. And now we create space for all parties to bring their stuff to the table so that when we're trying to make sense of what's happening, my bag of stuff has so many more reference points in it, so many more stories, right? Now I know that immigrants might be coming to work feeling a type of way. Now I know that first-generation professionals may feel uneasy about writing a review for the first time during a performance evaluation. And that is what folks are leading with. And so separate people from behaviors, right? Remember that your bag of stuff might have something else in it, and lead with curiosity so that we can actually develop empathy for each other. I bring my stuff, you bring your stuff, and we sift through it to make sense collectively of what's going on. And I think that that's critically important as leaders, as inclusive leaders, and particularly in this moment of time where everyone's bag is full of something different. Let's lead with that and remember that empathy is the key to connection, mm-hmm. but that requires an awareness, and we have to create space for that awareness to happen.
I really connected with this idea of approaching others with curiosity. We don't always know what someone's carrying into a workday, but taking time to ask and listen seems like a simple way to build better human connections.
I read a report a couple of weeks ago that highlighted, unsurprisingly, by the way, the gap between the employee experience of leaders mm-hmm. and the rest of employees, right? The rest of the employee
population.
Was
that population. Our research? Because we did that.
And what I think that highlights is that there is, to your point, that proximity is so important, yeah. that awareness is so important, because what happens is, when leaders don't realize that that gap exists, mm-hmm. they are leading from a place of ego or urgency. And that creates fear-based cultures that might perform well, but people don't trust each other. Yeah. And when people don't trust each other, they don't tell you the truth. And when you don't know the truth, you can't fix the problem. We can't create a better culture, right? We can't build better leaders. And so it is so important for organizational leaders to be aware of that gap and try to build relationships, build proximity, mm-hmm. bring their stuff and ask folks what's in their bag so that they can build more connection and understanding, to your point, that then results in more intentional and strategic support.
I love that. I could literally talk to you all day.
I know, this is fun.
Thank you so much for being on our How We
Thank
Work
you.
Podcast and enjoy the rest of Work Human
Thank
Life.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
As I think back on this conversation, one thing stands out. Inclusion isn't a checklist, it's a mindset. It's about curiosity, empathy, and making the invisible visible. For me, the big takeaway is this. Every person brings a different story to work, and when we take time to understand those stories, we build better workplaces. Thanks for listening, and if this sparked ideas for you, we'd love to hear them.